like an effort. You seem like a vibe. I'm a vibe. Let's go out.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Don't Tell My Wife podcast. Here, one of your hosts, TJ.
And it's your boy, Ken.
And yeah, we've got a very, very special guest in the building.
Big guest.
I've got two verys.
Okay. Okay. Hey,
big guest. Do you want to give a backstory?
Nah, you go, bro. Right, you so go. You
basically, yeah, when we decided to do Don't Tell My Wife, we were looking at other pages to kind of emulate and to be like, oh, okay,
Yeah.
So we were like, oh, I like the sound of this page. I like the sound of this page. And then for a couple of years now, I've been watching Dope Black Dads. So I was like, oh, okay, let me check out what they've got, because it's about fatherhood and stuff like that. So I was looking through his page. I was like, yeah, this page, if we can get kind of where they're going,
a crumb,
and eat anything. I'd be gassed.
Bro, we can't say pause, bro.
No.
Can we safely assume that we're all okay?
Yeah, cool. When you hit me, that's the same pause too much.
I'll be mature, bro. Okay, but cool.
Yeah, just randomly one day, posting on TikTok, you know, thinking, oh, how are we going to get this bigger? And guess who messages us? The founder of the Black Dads. And I was like, wait, is this really happening? I was gassed.
So
on that Friday, I think there was someone said something. We had like a nice message from a listener.
Yeah.
Then Marvin reached out to us, and I was like, this is one of the best Fridays ever, you know?
It felt like everything was making sense.
We're
getting somewhere now. That's literally what it felt. Like things are just starting to click.
Yeah, man. So obviously, with that being said, we've got Marvin on the podcast.
It's great to be here, man. Thanks for having me. Means a lot.
No worries. Thank you, bro.
I clap for myself, man. Thank you so much.
But yeah, man. Obviously, thank you very much, Marvin, for being here.
Yes.
Really appreciate it. But yeah, just to start quickly, how's your week been, Ken?
My week's been okay. Still, obviously, in my new job, which is good. It's going well. I haven't really done much this week, to be honest. Just work, come home, see like, with the family, I guess, man. Nothing crazy. I haven't really gone anywhere. Bank holiday weekend, didn't really do much.
Yeah.
I think I went to my friend's... Actually, I did do something on a Saturday. I went to my boy's birthday, TJ, which was cool. Then I went to Grace's house. It was nice. So yeah. Just saw friends, I guess.
Yeah.
What about you?
My week's been calm. It was my last week. It was my last day at work yesterday.
How was it?
I don't know. I think my last proper day would have been last week, Thursday.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, I still had a week left. So obviously, everyone was in last week. But this week, barely anyone was in. So I left the office around 3 and then I came home. But yeah, start my new job on Monday. So
sick.
Looking forward to that.
Sick.
And yeah, that's pretty much it. What about you, Marvin?
I had a busy week. I struggle to remember my days in real time. I can't remember. But I think I'm trying to get into a bit of a routine. It's half term. My kids actually are not even here. They're chilling in Bristol with their grandma. So they've been away all week, which has been really nice to like have a clear week. But as I think I told you guys earlier, I was doing this like leadership course for DEI team members. And I did that today, which was incredible. And we've just been helping them shape their plans for the rest of the year. Mm. It's a massive privilege to go into large corporations and help them shape what they're doing.
Mm.
Like I just love it. So that has really energized me today. So yeah, I'm on cloud 10 a little bit.
No, that's good.
I wanted to ask you quickly about half-term holidays and stuff with kids.
Do you dread
holidays with
it's
your
like
kids?
They're always off. I don't understand.
Do you dread
Hold on, wait. You do too have children?
Yeah, I've got a boy. He's 2.
And my child's 10 months.
Oh, okay.
We've
got a long way to go for the holidays.
By the way, you don't. But like it's happening. It's going to happen real quick. So it's interesting. At first, I really struggled in the adjustment from like them kind of always being with their mother to like actually now they're going into school and then they have time off like a concentrated week.
Mm.
Very rarely do you have full on 7 days with your children all day, all night. That's rare.
Yeah.
And if you don't have support, it can be quite heavy. Mm. I, now that they're 6 and 8, literally love it and look forward to it. But most of them, they do spend with their grandmother. So for January, when we came back from Christmas, they didn't go back until the 9th. So the first 9 days of the year, they were just with me one-on-one. We spend that time.
Yeah.
It was super intense. And by the time they left, I'm not going to lie, I was like, oh, thank God.
I can tell.
But by the afternoon, I was like, I was missing them.
I was like,
I wish you were, around. I just enjoy. You kind of get into a mode where the sounds, the like random constant interactions, the, oh, daddy, I need this, and constant stories, and you're teaching them stuff, and you know, we'll do painting, play football. You get into the flow of it. And then when you take that away and you have to go back into your adult state and they're not with you, you do really, really miss them. So it gets better. But I think whatever you do, try and get as much support as possible. But I have a structure of navigating anytime I have the children for the full day by myself. I have a structure.
Okay, that's good.
Which helps me. So like when they wake up, up until midday, they can do whatever they want.
Okay.
They can literally eat flies off the walls. Yeah. Like, whatever is in their values, they can do.
Yeah.
Then from 12 to 5, I take them somewhere and we do something together.
Yeah.
And then what I'm basically doing is exhausting them.
Yeah, yeah.
So getting them outside, take them into open spaces, do something that exerts them, go swimming, do something. And then at 5, I come back and then I do dinner and they can again watch TV. Then it's dinner. And then by 7:30, they're getting ready for bed and in bed.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. So one thing that you have to master is bedtime.
Yeah.
So you're at 2?
2, yeah.
You're about 6 months away from like bedtimes becoming like a rigid thing and you have to get into the pattern as soon as possible.
Question. What's an ideal time for a 2-year-old to go to bed?
7.
Seven.
That's early. You know why? Because me and my wife, we've not that we've struggled, but it's hard because he finishes early at 6. We both work, both get home 6:30, cook dinner, chill. Then it's already 8.
Yeah.
Before you know it, it's like, okay, we need to start putting him to bed.
Yeah, yeah.
And obviously with 2 years, they don't want to sleep. So that takes time. Then before you know it, it's like 9. And it's like, okay, he's falling asleep.
No.
So, yeah.
If you had them in bed at 9, you're going to suffer.
Mm-hmm.
One, because you don't get alone time.
Yeah.
Yeah, you need your own time to recharge and mentally get back in the game. Honestly, and I appreciate, like, quality time with your children is by far the best thing in the world. But not at the cost of peace and their routine. So the routine should be if you're getting back in at 6 or they're finishing at 6. When are you back in your house?
About 6:30.
So by about 6:30, you need a rigid routine so that by 7:30, they're in bed at all costs. And then if you, and obviously because you at that age, they don't just go down. It's not like as simple as go to bed and they're like, okay.
Yeah.
So you gotta do the moves, you gotta do the bouncing and the pattern.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then you gotta finally try and get them down and then they wake back up.
Yeah.
So by the time you've done all that, it's 8:15 anyway.
Yeah, yeah.
So but if you don't start and aim to get in there for 7:30, it will creep into 9.
Yeah.
And then there's no point. You might as well just keep them up and let them play until they fall asleep on the sofa and then put them to bed. If you're just gonna do that, just let it go. Either really be rigid or really let it go.
No, we're trying to be rigid. So recently, we've been trying to do 8 o'clock bedtime starts. But we try, but kids, it's difficult, man.
Yeah,
listen, difficult. They're an anomaly,
especially boys.
Malachi kind of runs on vibes at the moment.
Is it? Yeah, but he's still below one.
What time do your kids wake up then?
7. My son is currently waking up a bit earlier. He's taking a lot of pride on getting up and like being ready.
Is your kid the youngest
7.
Or the oldest one?
The oldest one, 8.
Okay.
So he's just like, I get up and I'm ready. Yeah. And I'll wake up at 7 and he will be already up, had his breakfast, sitting there reading the book.
Oh, that sounds nice though, you know. But you know, because bro, Malachi, he might pull a cheek and wake up at like 6 a.m. More time, maybe 7:30, 8 o'clock. But yeah, with those 6 a.m. ones, it's just like, I can't wait till you're old enough to where you can wake up and just go and sit down.
Yeah,
but then
yeah,
I don't want to miss out on these bits as well, though.
I can't wait for my kid to function. See how you said your son will go down and get his bed first. I can't wait till they can function on their own.
Bro,
they can do their own stuff. Like, I can't wait for
that. I'll probably tell you now, and I don't even know the dynamics, but what's most likely to happen is you're going to be the one to push them into the next phase of their development.
Yeah.
It's kind of a fatherly role thing to do. Mm-hmm. As long as you're doing it lovingly, is fine. But like that kind of like getting them up to like do the routine themselves, that's something that I was specific about because of what you just said.
Yeah.
I wanted to rest. But I tell you right now, you will miss when they come in your room and stand on your head. You will miss it.
You have no idea how much
I would love to wake up to my children just like jumping on my head and be like,
yeah,
you came to find me.
Yeah.
It doesn't happen in the same way. They become young people in your house, just like moving around, like I'm hungry and, you know, and just doing stuff. So we've made them so self-sufficient. we lose that thing. And I think there's like a bit of a trap between pushing them and like holding on to them too much.
Mm-hmm.
That's the balance that you're going to really try and find, try and navigate.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, I hear that. But yeah, just before we go into the proper episode,
by the way, this is the proper episode. I'm already in. So whatever's going on, we're happening. Ask away. Like, I almost feel like I'm here for whatever you need. So like, ask away.
Cool. So normally, just before episodes, we normally do song of the week.
Song of the week.
So my song of the week this week is Blood on the Dance Floor by Odumodu Black. And I didn't really clock how good it was until recently. I don't know why. Because obviously Dog Eat Dog was like my favourite. But then now I keep listening to that. So that's a really good song that I like. And then I also will add to the playlist Elon Musk by Shelly Poppy.
Okay. What kind of music are you into?
Who, me? I'm in a throwback state right now. I tried to listen to the new Future Metro Boomin, and I the vibrations wasn't connecting with where I was at.
Yeah.
It wasn't happening for me. And so I haven't left my kind of 70s 60s, 70s state for a while.
Eesh.
So, and even like 90s, I went back to Anita Baker. Anita Baker is the family playlist right now. Like, my kids are into Anita Baker because it's just like a good feeling kind of radio, easy listening music.
Yeah.
There's a song called Let the Love Flow by Sonia Lacey. That's my repeat song, like right now, just over and over and over again.
Yeah.
New stuff, less so.
Yeah, okay.
But like, I respectfully understand that I come from a space where the peak of my music discovery was between 96 and 2003. So this is Nas to Get Rich and Die Trying.
Yeah.
That's when I was like, everything that came out, I was buying, listening in real time.
Mm.
And then I had a bit of time where I went away and then I came back again.
Mm.
But this is again like 2 Chainz, Big Sean, Kendrick, Drake, that era. Like, this era doesn't pull me in any way on any level to listen to it.
It's not really that good, though. I know. I said to trigger you. I said, Shifty, I'm playing still. I'm playing.
Nas
is okay. He's okay. Yeah, but I don't see the hand.
I have powers too. I can trigger too. Yeah? Don't let me use my guess on you, sir. Man said, is Nas actually all that good, you know?
No, but you know what? I didn't grow up like, when Nas and Jay-Z and them lot were in their peak, I would say, I wasn't really in tune to music.
You were too young. So are you able to retrospectively go back and connect to great artistry, or is that a barrier for you? You only need turn up.
It's not a barrier.
You know what? I think, no, man. Like, it just doesn't sound good to me.
You like UK rap when they're talking about money.
UK rap.
They're talking about money.
Who's the best?
Yeah, like, what the hell?
Who's number one in the UK?
I can't pick all time. If I'm gonna say all time, number one in the UK, you probably have to say someone like Skepta.
Oh, you're definitely you're not a musician, man, are you? Like, you're not really a music man.
No, not really. I like
you like vibes, isn't it? Yeah. You're a vibes guy.
But that's I would say my number one is Jay Huss in the UK.
Cool, then with integrity, we don't need to discuss music. You know what I mean? Like, I said, like, what's your number one? Jay Huss and Skepta.
For me.
No, that's cool.
But he's a number one.
What I'm saying is, respectfully, we don't need to discuss music. Because, like, I'm talking about music.
You should have said Nas. You started off with the Nas.
Yeah, don't like Nas and your number one is Jay Huss and Skepta, we're not aligned in values.
No, but that's fine. That's okay. Wait, who do you think your number one in the UK?
Rich Free 2 is the number one without question.
See, that just shows the generation.
It's not even a generation.
Rich Free 2.
It's slightly part of us a little bit.
Respectfully, there's no little bit. There's no Wretch Free 2 with the eyebrows. None of that. Number one.
Is it?
The best.
I can understand where you're coming from.
He can rap better than anybody else. He makes better songs than anybody else. He writes melodic music and he can... Come on, man. His album, Black and White, I don't think anybody's made a more cohesive album. I think there's probably been a bigger selling album.
Mm-hmm.
There might be a critically acclaimed, but better, our music for us, our people. No one. No one's close.
Right, so what's your favourite Wretch Free 2 song? We'll add it to the playlist.
Oh my gosh. There's a tune with Daily, there's a tune with Delilah, there's a tune with Merkston. I'm thinking of like all the eras. If I had to say the best one.
Like one that you can rap to, that you know the lyrics.
Honestly, there's a tune where he's like, sorry, because by the way, yeah, mm-hmm. I've spent some time with him historically.
Okay. So see,
Sometime historically. Yeah. I have spent some time with him.
Yeah.
And he's clever, witty in a way. Mm-hmm. If you're intellectual, it's highly stimulating because it's mad cheeky, some of the things he says. And some of the bars that he makes are incredibly like, you know, if you know. It's not surface, but it's not complex. Mm. It's recitable without being like, it's not laborious. Like, what did he say? Mm. I can't remember what he said.
Yeah.
For me, number one, clear. Mm. I'm just going to put this on the table, you know, and leave some space between clear and what you just said.
No, but you know, it's funny, yeah, because if you ask Ellie, because I'm 28.
Mm.
If you ask any 28-year-old in London, UK, who their number one is, I guarantee none of them are saying that. So that's why I think it's just our generation.
I even forgot about six words. Because the thing is, when you said, about eight songs came to mind, and I was like, I don't want to miss one out. But 100% six words is such a clever tune. FR32... He's got an intro called Antwi.
After tonight, I'm going to go and listen to Rich.
Just be patient with it. Because I feel like Rich, based on your musical choices, there's a particular vibration that you like.
Yeah.
You may not find it there.
I won't. But I'll give
he
it a
has
chance.
Things to say.
But you listen to Avelino.
I listen to Getz as well. But they're different though. Getz is a hype man as well.
Yeah, okay. All right, first.
But my song of the week, this past few weeks, I've been in my gospel bag. So I'm going to give a big shout out to Sanya because his last song that he dropped was really nice. Bridegroom.
Yeah.
Featuring Ezra Ray. So I'll add that in there. And another one that he did, Rhythm.
Yeah.
Those two are my songs of the week.
Shout out Sanya. All the time. Okay, cool. Baby developments or baby/kid developments. Yeah. So this week, I've got one. So Formula, yeah. Aptamil, follow on too. Very expensive. Yeah. I think it's like £12 to £14 for a tub, yeah. Mm-hmm. And so I got, for my leaving at work, obviously, you know, when you become a father, nothing's really about you. So I got a £100 gift card from my workplace, for my team.
Mm-hmm.
And the first thing was like, okay, you know, there's a six pack of Aptamil for £60. So you're saving like maybe like £10.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, okay, let me use this to go on that rather than use it on myself. But, you know, fatherhood. Mm. So what I did was I done that. Prime delivery, supposed to be delivered on Sunday. Then I don't know why, but it basically on the day of it being delivered, no one delivered it. And it said it's been delayed for 48 hours.
It was Easter though, though.
No. This was 2 weeks ago.
Okay.
So obviously we had like a little formula left, like a small formula in the thing. That's why I ordered the six pack. And they were like, I must have messaged them on the helpline saying, This is critical stuff that I need.
It's food.
You know what I mean? So how can someone not deliver it when they're supposed to? So they gave me a £5 voucher, and then they said they'll probably come tomorrow. Didn't come the next day. Had to go buy like a separate £14 formula, is what it is. Then I called them and I was complaining to them, and what they said was basically that they'll refund the money onto the gift card, so I got money back. And that if they do deliver that formula within the 2 days, we get to keep it or send it back. So obviously, on the Thursday it came. So £60 worth of formula has come and I've got my money back.
A win is a win.
It's a big win. Like, you know them ones, when I saw it come, I just started smiling because I was like, wow, this is formula.
So
bro,
what are you going to do with a £60?
I'm just going to use it on myself now. You know what the thing is? I don't know why, but he goes through like a tub of formula. I think it's like one a week.
I don't understand how they eat
so much. And you know when you deep about fatherhood and things being expensive, it's when you give them the bottle, he drinks 6 ounces. He'll drink 4 ounces. You'll still see two, 3 ounces sometimes. And I think, you know how much money this is that you're wasting right now? But obviously,
it's £1.27 that you got in the bottle.
And I'm like, you're not drinking it. When he tries to be prestige, you're drinking it. It's so annoying. But obviously, with this one, I can breathe light because it's for free.
Well done, man. That's a win.
It's great. It's been since that's happened.
Yeah.
Everything's been great.
I love free stuff.
Yeah. Honestly,
you have to get yourself hooked up with like all the brands and all that, and just be like, excuse me.
Well, if Pampas, if you want to send me, because we're running out. Because obviously, baby shower, we got loads of like Pampas wipes. Now it's 10 months. We're running out of.
You still have some.
We still have like two big packs of four size nappies, two small packs of three size, which is about to finish. Then we still got like maybe like seven packs of wipes.
So you haven't bought wipes since?
No, I haven't bought wipes. I haven't bought Pampers since.
Wow.
Which is great.
Why are you using Pampers, bro? You're expensive. Do you mean just...
I mean just nappies.
Okay, cool.
You're
rich, bro.
No, but people... Amen.
Yeah.
People gave us like the Audi ones, Pampers. So we got Audi different ones. Good,
if you're a parent and you don't shop in Audi, I don't know what you're doing.
Yeah, we're there.
Yeah. Audi's our shop.
Yeah. Like, listen, I run a mock and then it's like £87. I'm like, God bless you, man. Yeah.
It's getting more expensive though. Because what's funny is when me and my wife first moved in together on our house shop, everything for like £70. Like, everything. This was like three years ago, 2021. Yeah. Everything £70 now. £70 don't really do much, bro.
Try and do that in Tesco's.
It can't even happen in Tesco's.
You got two bags of stuff, and you're like, I'm gonna be hungry by Tuesday. Yes.
What's it good?
Impossible. Even Sainsbury's is a riff.
What's gonna say? No, that's my baby development.
Yeah.
What about you?
My baby development. He's becoming very, very dangerous. Like he's at that age now where
no danger.
He will just climb onto something and try and jump off.
Hmm.
Like he's at that stage now, and he's like, you can't take your eye off him.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
Like the other day, I can't remember what I was doing. I just see him climbing on my dining table. Yeah. Like standing. my dining table. Yeah. Standing like by the edge. I was thinking, if you don't get down, like it was scary. I'm thinking, bro, like, so I can't even leave you for 2 minutes on your own.
Yeah.
So he's at that stage now where it's crazy.
So I have some code about the twos.
Yeah.
So everyone says terrible twos, yeah. But what the terrible twos are is them trying to mimic you. So everything they're doing is them trying to do, I want to be an adult, I want to carry the glass, I want to drink from this, I want to do what you're doing. And if you let them in a controlled environment, they no longer are curious and they stop doing it. So the terrible twos didn't last very long. It was like 3 months. Then they just kind of like wind down. There was a phase that my daughter was drawing on the wall. I was like, cool, if you draw on the wall, you got to clean it off. And then she looked at me and she carried on. And then when it came to cleaning it off, it was so hard. She cried for about 10 minutes because she couldn't get it off. And then I helped her clean it off. And then she never, ever drew on the wall again. So these are the little things people don't understand. You have to kind of give them, it's a bit like a vaccine. You have to give them like a little bit of a dose of it.
Yeah.
And then they get really comfortable and powerful about it. And then all of a sudden they realize the work they have to do. So it's like you can do it, but there's the consequence. The cost is you have to clean up, tidy up.
Yeah.
And then like, I know, if he's up there, I'd be like, I'll talk him through it. I'd be like, so you're going to jump here. Yeah, if it does hurt. Yeah, and you do cry, it's fine. I'm here, but jump. And then you watch him and he thinks about it and he's like, nah, he'll come back down. Or he'll jump and then be like, oh, I can do it.
Yeah.
Once he knows he can do it, now in his mind he's like he's not scared anymore. So so this is all about, you're in the psychology phase.
Mm-hmm.
You're in the phase of like, I'm throwing myself at it. Yeah. You just gotta be there, carry, drive, fix, buy. That's your primary role. Yeah. You're now a psychologist and you're just there thinking about how do I manipulate this person into not killing themselves?
Yeah, pretty much. Have you got any developments for your kids? Anything new that they...
My
kids at the moment, it's really interesting because they're at a phase here where I can't actually fully speak to them because they're fully living lives now.
Mm-hmm.
And you kind of like find that you might inject energy into their existence. So I want to give them the privacy of going through the phases of development on their own.
Mm.
But we are in a really beautiful phase where they're walking into their gift. So my son is like captain of the football team and he's been playing and he's like, they've actually lost so many games. They lost every game this season.
Okay.
Respectfully, because they went into they're a new team in a new league.
Okay.
Yeah, it happens.
But they're in the year above.
Okay.
So they're the newest and the youngest team in the league.
Yes.
So they were losing every single week and he's been captain. He's had days where he's not liked it and he hated it. And he wanted to quit. And I was talking him through the process and the consequence of quitting. And then he actually was like, all right, I'm going to stay through. And he stayed through all the way until the last game of the season.
Mm-hmm.
And they won the last game of the season. Sick. And the beaming pride on his face of finally win.
Yeah.
So at the moment, we're doing also this other thing of like a kick-up everyday challenge. So he has a certain amount of kick-ups he has to do in a row to qualify and pass through. So now he's on 15.
Okay.
He texts me today and says, I'm on 17, Dad. Like, I'm getting 17 kick-ups.
Wait, the eight-year-old?
Yeah.
Hey, man, this might be
God,
dude.
Yeah, Mbappe project team.
Wait, are you a football guy?
I am. I'm huge. Like, I'm not a player. I'm an Arsenal fan.
Yes, let's go. That's how we like it.
What team do you support? How many things can you do wrong on this podcast? Your own podcast. What team do you support?
Ask him.
I'm a Spurs fan.
Have you ever met a black Tottenham fan? Have you met a black Tottenham fan?
Not a logical one. Not one that I want to hang out with. What a no.
You know what? My dad supports Spurs.
To blame him, yeah. He's Nigerian.
Yeah, he's Nigerian still. I blame him.
Nigerian Tottenham fans are I don't want to be disrespectful, yeah. Bro. Because the real ones support Man United.
Nah, because, yeah. Hey, don't kill me.
No, but yeah. You came for Nas, so now it's on the
list. Yeah, I'm a team. You know, but I'm not a glory hunter, though. Okay, so why do you support Man United? I mean, no, Arsenal.
It's my local team.
Is it?
Yeah.
Where are you originally from?
Hackney.
Okay, it is.
That's my team.
It is.
And also okay. Thierry and Ian Wright. Like, yeah, if you, yeah. For me, it was about black icons.
Yeah.
I fell in love with football because of Ian Wright. Like, I watched it to see him score and do the bogle. Mm. People don't understand, like, him doing the bogle and then watching that a match of the day was a conversation. It was in the sun the next day.
Yeah.
It's a massive deal. So, him, he is literally the one that pushed. So, John Barnes did it in a way on the field.
Yeah.
And he was loved and, you know, played for England. And he was like, they thought he was Brazilian. And he was like a world club. But people that, everyday black people that loved football, Ian Wright. He brought us. He had a gold tooth, a part in his hair, and did the vocal when he scored. Yeah. Come on.
See, my guy was Jermaine Defoe, man.
No, Lily King. Look at the name. Shine, Ian Wright.
Jermaine Defoe, Jay Haas. It's time to see a trend. You love your short kings, innit?
Absolutely. So what position does your son play?
Don't kill me.
So he plays centre-back at the moment.
Okay.
Oh, nice.
I feel like he could be centre-midfield, but what's interesting, if you're tall and strong and fast, they put you centre-back.
Yeah, 100%.
And I think what they try to do is put the most competent players at the back. So you're either a small, tricky, like, winger type person, and they put you up front. Mm. But if you're tall, strong, you're just centre-back.
Yeah.
You can dictate the play.
Yeah, because really they're trying to stop the goals. So at the moment... He'll play there. I think he'll move slightly further forward, but like I allow the coach just to do it because like I have some real problems on the touchline as well.
Yeah, I was gonna say.
I forget because I watched the Crystal Palace documentary. Have you seen it before?
No, I haven't. No.
But yeah, so basically they had a problem with the parents on the sideline, like giving their kids instructions. Let's say they're in training.
Eight, nine
if
their
kids made a mistake, they're shouting at their kids, but the coach is like, "Let them do it."
Yeah.
So how do you navigate that?
I never shout at him. Mm-hmm. My relationship with him is that he's in charge. Mm, yeah. Okay. And my job is to create the environment for him to be in charge.
Yeah.
But 2-3 weeks ago, the referee was trying to do this thing of like, let the game play. Yeah. Mm. Now, I'm all for let the game play.
Yeah.
But if you see children leaving the ground with 2 feet up and they're 2-footing people, someone gets elbowed and it happens in a sequence, you've got to stop the game and regulate.
Yeah.
So after like 3 harsh tackles and then one of them was on my son and then he finally gave a whistle because the guy was down. The little boy was down like rolling around, crying actually. So there, our coach runs over to go and check on him and then he finally stops the game to be like, all right, take your time to look at him. And I was just like, I cannot believe what you're doing. Like, because they're still 8. So my view is that they got to learn the game through example. So if they're doing mistakes, you don't have to keep giving loads of red cards, but at some point you have to give an instruction of like the kind of game that you're trying to play with them and set the pace. And he wasn't doing that. So I got very directional with him.
Yeah.
And then he very much made it aware that he was like uncomfortable with how direct I was being with him.
Yeah.
And then he was a bit like, I don't know. So I had to ban myself from the sideline. So I went for a walk.
Yeah.
So it's always about the if it's the referees doing too much. I'm not even really into the like, oh, that's a call. It's not call by call, but I felt like it was dangerous and kids were rolling around crying.
No.
But it's really hard. It's hard not to yell.
Yeah. How did you get him into football? Because with my son, it's like he doesn't care about football. And it's breaking my heart. Like I'll watch a game. We just go and find his mum. I'm like, bro, sit down with me. Let's
no,
watch.
No, no, no.
Let's watch. Or if there's a football, I have a little football at home, I'm always passing it to him. He'll just look at it and then walk away. Or he'll pick it up and like throw it. Like, when do you get them into football?
4 or 5. But
we
don't
got
stop.
Time for that. The
don't
kids,
know.
On Instagram, kids are playing football at his age.
Bro, what's that
Chelsea one? Yeah, Jordan Greenstone.
Bro, when he was like 1 year
old.
Bro,
he's kicking football, bro. Jesus.
No.
Oh, my project, Saka.
Don't do it to your child.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Do not, because the thing is, this is why I never, ever made my child play football at any point.
Okay.
So my whole thing was just to leave him and I was hoping. I'm not like I was sitting there playing, please pick up the ball.
Please
kick it.
Yeah.
For the first year or so, they would just pick it up and run away with it. And I'd be like, oh, that's not how it works.
Yeah.
And then you take the time.
Yeah, yeah,
but I always feel like if they find it naturally themselves, it will stick with them longer. And they will go against adversity to continue to play. So it wasn't until he was about six that he just started and he requesting, like, Dad, I want to go football. I said, do you want to join a team? And he's like, yeah. And then I'd like take him to a team and he'd be like, oh, I don't want to go today. I'm like, fine, it's okay. Leave him. And then when he got to like 6.5, going into 7, it was like a demand. I want to go play football. Where can we go? My friend's got this team. Can I go, Dad? I want to play. I need boots. Da, 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 da. And then about 6 months ago, we sat down and I was like, look, because he was trying to get cereal and he like has honey nut cornflakes or something like that. Yeah. And I was like, it's like 80% sugar. So I was trying to find a way to not have him have it.
Mm.
And then I said to him, by the way, he listens to the podcast, so hopefully he doesn't listen to this one. telling the code of how I've navigated it. So basically, he was eating sugary cereal and I didn't want him to. And then I said to him, like, what do footballers eat for breakfast? So he went on ChatGPT and then he started Googling, searching, like, what do they eat? And it gave him a whole list of, like, fruits and porridge. So now he has unsweetened porridge every day for breakfast. So stuff like that. And then now he does, like, a certain amount of kick-ups. He does a certain amount of cardio. So he does calisthenics.
Yeah.
Every day. So, like, all these little things, he's picking up behaviors and traits on his own. So my thing is just, here's an invitation. This is what professional football players are doing. And now I can watch a game with him. Still not a full game, fully attentive, because it's just a different pace.
Yeah.
But we watch every highlight for every game the day after it comes out. So I'll show him all the goals and be like, oh, have you seen? And now he's remembering players, positions, and all that type of stuff.
That's the dream, man.
Like, me and my dad, we used to, before match of the day, it was Premiership. Remember, yeah, it was Premiership. I think it was on Sunday. Every Sunday morning, we watched Premiership together. And that's what started my love for football. That's probably why I support Spurs. Because my dad.
Yeah. And what about your six-year-old?
So my daughter plays. She trains every week. And it's really interesting because she does not really enjoy athletics and all that type of stuff, but she loves playing. And I think it's kind of just like watching her brother play. So she's really excited about starting the season next year and playing week in, week out. It's really hard for young girls to stay in the game. So getting in the game is quite easy at that age. When they get to like 9, 10, 11, they start dropping off because they start to develop and it's not really comfortable and easy.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's a massive barrier that I think the Women's League. But I think by the time she's a young adult, the WSL will be a real, real thing.
Yeah, definitely.
It kind of already is, to be fair, respectfully. It is,
yeah.
But it'll be even bigger and the road in will be clearer and easier for someone like her if she ever wanted to. But she's really an artist. Like, she's an incredible artist. Like, she makes art for the house and we're just like, that's actually really good. Can I keep this? Like, I want this one.
Yeah.
So she's actually really dope in creativity.
Wow. No, that's sick to hear. That's actually sick to hear. So getting into Dope Black Dads, how did that come about? So you've been around for how long now? Is it 6 years?
5 years.
5 years. Okay, cool. So how did that actually start?
It started off as a WhatsApp group. It was a Father's Day. Like, I think it was 2018.
Mm-hmm.
I had a rough 6 months and I was just trying to figure out fatherhood for real. Like, what is it? And I'm like a really curious person. Like, basically, my whole modus operandi is kind of like, I will not be negatively impacted. I will not be challenged. I will find answers. Okay.
Yeah.
This is like my script.
Yeah.
So when I got into parenting, I was like, I can figure this out. It'll be fine. Because I've figured out professional world. I've done this. I've done this. And I was so intentional. And I put so much effort into it and it just wasn't landing. Like, it just was, the affinity wasn't there. I didn't quite get, like, what am I supposed to do? So the phase that you're in now, the first 6 months specifically, where there's just no real connection to you and the child, really.
Yeah, yeah.
It's kind of like, you're like a stranger in your house taking up all the air.
Yeah.
So I just had to mentally understand, like, what could I give? And this is okay. That's more I needed to know, is this okay? What's going on? It's not like whether I could do it and I felt like I needed something. It was just like, is this okay? And is this how it normally happens for other people? And I'd never really spoken to my friends about fatherhood in that detail. So when I created the group, I was just sad. And I just wanted to talk to other men. But I'm really lucky to know, like, incredible men, Black leaders who are highly functioning, high achieving Black men and fathers. So Dope Black Dads is basically high achieving Black fathers. That's what it's meant to be. And so when we made the group, it was just like, thank you for letting me watch, even through Instagram, like you pushing on a play and on a swing and looking happy. That helps me because I see you doing it. I'm like, let me go back into the trenches and figure this out and how I can do more. And so when we created the group, every conversation we had in the group was literally transforming me. Because again, we had never really been vulnerable. Mm-hmm. And maybe this is different for your generation. I say generation is like a school year.
Yeah.
A school 5 years. Yeah. So, you know, anyone that's 35 to 40, we have a different experience. 40 to 45, they have a different experience. But the people who are like 30 to 35, they're genuinely growing up with lots of norms that just didn't exist for people who are 10 years older than them.
Mm-hmm.
So talking about how I feel about parenting, having a parenting conversation platform podcast wouldn't have been a thing 10 years ago. Fatherhood wasn't even like a cool thing. It was just like, yeah, you're a dad, but like, what else do you do?
Yeah.
So I think it's really important that when we created the group and we had the conversations, I was just learning about what men are going through. And my dad was absent. There's probably a devoid of enough successful black men older than me in their 50s. There are definitely some, and I know many of them, but there aren't as many as maybe they will be for this generation. Like people who are 30 are like making six figures or doing really well on their way to something really early. And I needed that information. Like, how do you keep your home, your business going and still be a good, what actually is a good dad? Good, what does that mean?
Yeah.
Like in practical terms. So we went on the journey of finding all that stuff out. And then the podcast was a consequence of like the conversations being too rich to keep to myself. Mm. And then shouts to Farrah McKenzie, who heads up BBC One Extra. He brought us on their platform and we did six episodes. And it was some of the best, like, it gave me a bug for broadcasting in a way that I probably would have said no to a million times before. So shouts to him and Jamelia and Richard Blackwood and Kojo for doing the episodes with us, actually.
Richard Blackwood, is that the guy that was on these?
Yeah.
I loved how you don't even know who that
is. And he's a comedian as well.
He's like God broadcaster in blackness. Like he had a own show. He had a song.
That's in EastEnders.
He might have been in EastEnders.
No, he was in EastEnders. Yeah, but I mean, Richard Blackwood is bigger.
Oh, sorry, my bad.
So I have to give Richard Blackwood his flowers specifically because when I was growing up, not only was he one of the few black people on TV, he was just slightly older than us. He's probably 10 years older, but he was so young, cool, and interesting and very dynamic. Very good looking dude. And then I was really fortunate enough that when I did the Sunday show and he would, as a comedian, he would come and perform and I built a relationship with him. He's just a really good dude. Like a really, really good dude. He's always been really kind and thoughtful. He's always checked in. And even when he was on Hollyoaks, he brought me on set and we did a couple of sessions up there for some men's work that we were doing. Some dad's work. We covered one of the shows with him, one of the storylines that he had. And he's always been amazing. And I think sometimes he gets overlooked as a person of note. And we kind of do that a lot in blackness where we forget what people did. But you have to understand, 25 years ago, him and Ian Wright were like on daytime TV.
Yeah.
Like on daytime TV, sorry, on mainstream TV with their own show in their name. It was unheard of.
25 years ago. 25 years ago.
Were you 8?
No, but I'm 27. Like,
would have been 3 or what?
I was like 3 or something. Wow, that's a long time ago though, to have your own daytime TV.
For Ian Wright and Richard Blackwood to have a show at that time was out of this world. And he was absolutely crushing it. He was the biggest thing in our community by miles.
Mm.
And he's always kept a certain level of honor about him, which I just think is the hardest thing to do when you're in your ascension.
Honestly.
And I just, you know, I always want to shout him out whenever, because I genuinely look at someone like that and think, my next 10 years, how do you navigate it? And there's an indicator right there.
Yeah. Okay, cool. So from when you became a father to now, what have you kind of learned from that?
To be honest, it all came back to me. So basically, yes, we created a group and, you know, I went through a journey of my relationship to parenting and I had to understand who I was for real.
Mm.
So basically, and I was probably about your age when I got married and I was doing it from a place of like, this is what I should do. Mm. And so I never really understood what it meant in real terms. I just had an idea and I had a lot of conviction. So I was just going to find the best person I could find.
Mm.
We're going to get married. And we're going to have a child. And we're going to have two. And we're going to buy a house. Then we get a car. Then and I did all of the escalator things in like 3.5 years.
Yeah.
I went absolutely crazy and I really focused on it. Then I had all my things and then I was really unhappy.
Mm.
And I was like, how can I be unhappy? I did the thing. So the concept is called an escalator relationship. So it's where you just kind of go into a relationship and just hit all the markers and just keep doing the things.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem with that is that it's not always designed in your mold. It's not for everybody. Mm. And you may need to design a relationship in a slightly different way. You may need to create different goals. But also as a high achiever, achieving things, which I thought you could do in relationships, doesn't work. It's not about achievement. Like, it's about being, which is something men don't do very well.
Mm.
Like, just being a person, like, how are you in your family unit? How do you exist around them? How do you make the family and the house feel is what you're measured on. You can make all the money in the world, which you have to make some, but you can make all the money in the world. Let's say you go from this to like making $250,000 a year.
Mm-hmm.
You would think that this is going to solve some problems.
Yeah.
It creates more problems.
Mm.
And if you're not in a good position and you're not sturdy yourself, those problems will inject themselves in every single part of your life.
Yeah, 100.
And it makes it harder. So my view is that develop this real relationship with yourself and be very selfish about it. You need to recharge. You need to have really strong personal values and morals and ways to guide in terms of what you do. You still need to provide, but you also need to connect with the emotional side of you that really allows you to have empathy for your family and your children. Practices like when they walk over to you, you drop your phone and you're like, how are you? What can I do? And then when you walk in the house, like, how do you walk in the house in energy? Like, you two have now been out of the house for a couple of hours. You're going to go home. What's the actual things that you do to make sure you're honoring the fact that they're still at home, you're here? So when you come back in, the first thing is you've got to check the temperature. How's it been?
Mm.
What do you need me to do? Those are the first two questions you should go. Don't go and do anything else. Just ask that question. When you've completed those tasks, then you go and take some time intentional with your child and give space. So you are in charge now for the next phase of whatever it is. Now it's going to be bedtime. You do bedtime. When you finish, you go back to your wife and you say like, hey, how was your day? How was your evening? What did I miss? Get the full update. Not the simple version. When you get the full update, the active listening part is really internalizing what that is. So every time you leave her on her own, what does that mean for your partners? What experiences that she have? Where does she get stuck? What are her challenges? You have to really understand what those things are so that when you're coming back, you come in with the right energy.
Yeah.
For me, that understanding would have saved me so much time of stress and headache and not knowing. But I really just thought it was about my provision, you know, being a good vibes, being a good dude, like turning up on time, like being well-intended. Yeah. It's not. It's an actual act of service. And the act of service has real key markers of whether it's working or not.
Yeah. So that's when you used to come back from work and then attend to the child, how did you balance, you know, you come back from work, you start. So my kind of day is waking up at 6:30, going to the office by 9, probably getting home by like just after 7 or just before 7. It depends on the day and the trains. But then now going from doing that to going straight to going to help with bedtime, you're very tired sometimes. Mm-hmm. So how did you navigate that?
So when you look at your day, and I kind of mostly work for myself, but I was in companies for a while, but you've got to look at your days slightly differently and restructure them and turn them on their head to center your family first. So if you have a job, which means that you have to leave at 7, you lose an additional hour of being inside the house, sometimes even 2, of being in the house and around your children. That comes at a cost.
Mm.
So you have to ask yourself, what kind of life can I live which will allow me to have more time at home? Because if you're leaving at 7, you wake up at 6, and you have to get out and be out of the house for almost 12 hours, that is unworkable. So one thing that I say to dads is that actually being successful in your job isn't as important. And I fully appreciate TikTok.
No, I can understand
that. Quotables will tell you otherwise that you have to make this much certain money. The number one thing is your presence and the energy you bring when you're there.
Mm-hmm.
You must find a way to provide. I fully understand that. But turn it on its head and prioritize your family first.
Mm.
The money will always come. If you're working, you will find it. But you have to search for that environment which allows you to work in a way that makes sense for your family.
Yeah.
I cannot explain how much you being tired means nothing.
Yeah, it actually doesn't.
You know? It doesn't. And I say that in a loving way, not that because you don't, or you're tired doesn't mean anything. I just mean it's not their job to care about how tired you are.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, you have to manage your own tiredness. So you have to find a way to recharge, to self-care, to soothe yourself so that you're able to be powerful when you're in the family space.
Yeah.
There's a really good talk between Nikki Giovanni and, oh, I've forgotten his name. James Baldwin.
Mm-hmm.
Please watch that conversation. It's like a really powerful, it's old as dirt as well. It's like 40, 50 years old.
Yeah.
But it's a conversation about him, and they're both scholars and academics and thinkers from the Black community in the US ages ago. And she's basically saying to him that you go to work and you smile at the man all day. And you come home to me and I get hell because you're tired. Mm. It's like, no, lie to me too. You love me the most, lie to me too. Yeah. It's a really beautiful conversation because I always thought of like, you know, women, specifically black women, being my safe space. So I can come and just be authentic.
Yeah.
And then you really think about what you're transferring into them. It's a really, really powerful thing that they're not our, like us. They're our safe space, but they're not our space to unload.
Yeah.
We have to find ways to do that on our own. You need your brotherhood, your connection points to be able to do that. And you need your own hobbies, your own space to release. And you have to bring yourself powerfully back into your family. Mm. That's a completely different notion to what we kind of thought, which is our partners are like, it's a little bit like it's giving me mum vibes.
Yeah.
And you have to be mindful of not doing that to your partner because you would deplete them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, that makes a lot of sense. It's, you know what, as obviously as bad as it was, kind of it is a blessing of blessing in disguise to kind of have had obviously COVID and then now it's hybrid working. So it's a lot easier now to be able to do things. Like
we're at home more.
Yeah, yes. Definitely at home more. Cause I honestly speaking, like we only did work for what, 2-3 years? Before hybrid working came into it. And going into work Monday to Friday, 5 days a week, and then people having kids as well, that sounds so crazy to me. Doing school runs, doing nursery pickup, like it's very wild. So at least there's that. But yeah, no, it is. Fatherhood's very interesting. It's a very interesting journey. You learn about yourself a lot.
Do you feel like it's making sense now?
No, it's making sense. I've got the hang of it. I think I've got the hang of it at the moment. You know, some days are better than other days, and that's completely normal. Like even today, before we left, Abs went to Asda, and we were just chilling. And the next minute, now he's got a cold, so he's, you know, trying to rub his nose. He's screaming. Then after doing that, he was just sitting there crying for like a good 20 minutes. Wow. And when he just started, but you know, when the crying gets louder and louder and louder, then it turns into screeching. So as soon as it turned into screech, I was so overwhelmed. I just shouted his name like Malachi, like Jesus, like give me a minute to you know try sort something. But obviously, I kind of had to center myself and think, okay, he's just a baby. He doesn't know what's going on. So obviously, after hearing the screeching and that, giving him a bottle, he fell asleep, which is fine. But it's just like I'm just trying to build more patience and to understand that. Okay, you know, not every day is going to be rosy. Like, remember, was it 2 weeks ago where we had that rough morning where then he went to Stratford to go to his grandparents' house. So it was like a very, very rough morning of him just not sleeping and waking up. And I was supposed to look after him by myself because my wife was going into work. But it was that bad that I was like, okay, can you just drop him at your mum's on the way to work? Which was nice of her to do because obviously it helped me be able to recharge a bit. But then as well, it's also me thinking I need to start having a lot more. I have patience. I've learned patience a lot over this time. But I need to have a lot more patience to be able to deal with a little person that doesn't really know what he wants. And he's just, you know.
Have you been to therapy before?
Therapy? Ooh. No. So I've done therapy once. I've done therapy once. But I don't know if I need a therapist. I feel like I need like, because therapy is you just talking and them just listening and asking questions, right? But I feel like that's what most of them do. But I feel like I need a mentor that actually listens and talks back to me about certain things. Mm. So when I tried that therapy once and she just kept asking questions and asking me to explain this, I was just like, this isn't for me. I need...
This is important.
Okay.
So, so important. So for you, because I'm listening to you and you sound like me. You sound like me at 27 to the letter. I had a desire to do it though, but I went and I didn't get it. And I went to a session and I spoke for an hour and I spilled my guts, all my fears, my worries, my concerns. And I loved it. I went away and I was like, oh my God, this is the best thing in the world. I went back again for the second week and I spoke for a full on hour and they never gave me any feedback. And I felt so vulnerable of speaking and sharing and they never gave me anything back.
Yeah.
So then I was just angry. I was just like, what the fuck? You just wanted my money, didn't you? That's what you care about. So I went on this whole story of what it is. I rang my mother-in-law at the time and I was like, look, you're a therapist. How should I approach this? Because I have a really strong feeling about what I just experienced. And she was like, you're doing great work. Yeah. And actually, what you should consider it is take 6 sessions at a time as one session. in the successions, you will find that you share more than others, you will receive information more than others, but that allows a therapist to gain a real picture of like what's happening. Because all they're doing is listening to you to understand the patterns of your language, but also to hear what your story is. Because when your story, you're basically living through your story right now. And if we understand what that is, I can almost predict to you what your next couple of steps are going to be. Because you're committed to living through your story rather than just like, it's not like random variables. So when if you think about yourself now and you've chosen your partner, you've chosen to get married, you've chosen to have children at the age of 27 for a specific reason. There's something that's happening for you, which is like, I am ready to do this.
Yeah.
Now, if you are ready to do this, we don't know until it goes wrong. And then we're like, maybe I wasn't ready to do this. Because if you make it, then there is no real record of whether you were ready or not. Yeah. What a therapist will do will help you understand your story and interrupt the pattern of behavior that you're about to create. And so they'll keep showing a mirror to you in terms of why things are happening over and over again. So one of my favorite questions to ask men is like, what's unwanted but persists in your life? That is the first introduction to what your story potentially is. So let's just say in your life, you find that you're always tired and burnt out. 3 times a year, you just like, I'm burnt out, overworked myself. Or I get short with my child and I snap at them.
Yeah.
There's a reason why the particular sound of your child makes you have that particular reaction. Where's the meaning in that? So then you can take that question into therapy and say, the crying makes me feel helpless, for example.
Yeah.
It's the only thing that I can't do. I can fix, I can pay, I can drive, but my child screaming, I actually don't know what to do. In that helplessness, I feel worthless and I get to look at my child and feel like the person I love the most, I can't stop you from crying. Mm. That triggers me and I have a wave of anxiety, that warm glow you feel when you're like, "This, what the heck is going on?"
Yeah.
That feeling is a massive trigger for me, so I need to now pay attention to it. What else gives me that feeling? And then you start connecting dots as to where else you get that feeling. If you feel like when your family, I used to have this thing that when my family would go to Bristol and leave me, that's where the mother's family is from, she would go to Bristol and I'll just come home to an empty house. And I'd be like, yo, where's my family gone?
Yeah.
Like it would really, really trigger me. Mm. And I'd call and be like, hey man, like, yo, you gone? I forgot you was going. Okay, cool. So when are you back? Like, should I come up? I'll drive up. Yeah, I'll come up. Yeah. And I really hated the idea of being away from my family. And it used to trigger me all the time. And then she was one day just like, I was like, you know.
Yeah.
So I had to go to the mountains and have that conversation and figure out what does that abandon me. And it really was centered on my family meant so much to me. I just needed to be in it. Yeah. I didn't know how to be in it. But the idea of them not being here, like, that was my life anchor at that particular point.
Mm. That is the same kind of feeling I get. It might, some might say it's possessive, but I hate when my wife goes out. Like, when she goes out, yeah, I'm like, when you back? Like, yeah. Why are you taking so long? like, come home, bro. Yeah. So that reminded me a bit about how I feel when like my wife goes out, even when my son goes out, for example. But yeah, that just...
So my view is investigate. Yeah. Investigate all of those feelings because they're not necessarily a problem, but they're not also not normal either.
Yeah. Mm.
So when you understand them, you can be at peace. I'm a completely different person than I was 10 years ago.
Yeah.
And in fact, 5 years ago. So the growth is like really super intentional. But I'm almost glad we're having this conversation because I feel like we're having it at a point where my questions arose really strong for me, specifically where you are. By the time I was at this point, I was just like, I don't get it. I was literally like, I don't get it. Why do dads exist? Because I'm just a side man in my own family.
Yeah.
And I want this. And I still feel like a side man. Mm. But then when they got to like 3 and 5, it's flipped. It flipped. Like, not only did I get it, I knew how to do it.
Mm.
I was comfortable. There was no situation that would throw me. And not only that, I started adding value. Mm. Like, that's a different thing. When your gift matters inside your family, you get to shine. I don't even like the idea of my family going, no, like, I want my kids now with me, like their vibes. We have a whole like thing that we do, a whole weekly plan, a daily plan, a way of coexisting. It's the best experience I have on earth. Like, it takes a minute to get there and people don't realize that. So for you as a dad, like going from where it's me and my partner and we're like, finish each other's sentences and dancing in our socks to like, she's like, just do the thing. And you're like, yo, I loved you, man. Like, yeah. Like, and it just takes a minute of recycling. This is why I think having men around you, different types of men, age, race, everything, put them around you, put them in groups, have them accessible to you, will really help you when you're challenged, because that's what's going to tell you what the code is to navigate.
Yeah, because and that's one thing that we've been saying, because obviously me and Ken, we obviously Ken's child too, so he got married and had a kid like a year before me, but it was like, I have him to speak to about fatherhood and stuff like that. So every time there's a problem or anything, I always go to Ken. But I feel like as well, we've been saying that we kind of need more different types of people, like older than us, some that even maybe just younger than us as well, that are in the same kind of position in terms of, you know, dads, some that are maybe husbands as well, just to lean on to get those kind of things. So, yeah, we do kind of need to make a bit more of an effort. But then sometimes you don't want to kind of come across as a bit beggy, if you know what I mean.
What do you mean?
So it's like, for example, it's like, If you see someone on Instagram and you think, oh, wow, they're really doing something, reaching out to them and asking them questions. Sometimes I don't know if I'm... You know what I mean? Because there's a lot of times, like even with this pod stuff, reaching out to someone and it just says invitation sent, they don't open the message, they don't reply back. It's just like, ooh. Wow.
You're a man, though. You can accept, like, reception. When I say you're a man, I don't mean be a man. I mean, men are... conquerors or foragers. We go out to achieve things. You get rejected all day, every day. If you, the amount of job applications you got before you got your job, the amount of girls you were like, excuse me, can I talk to you, before they were like, what do you want? It's built into our existence to be rejected 50 times.
Yeah.
Going on someone's DM and being like, look, I want you on my podcast, and fearlessly just, I still ask 100 people all the time. We're trying to work on 2 big people to come on my podcast now. And they're being long. They're not saying no. They're just like, there's a process to get to those people.
Yeah.
You know, I think just being on the front foot will put you ahead. You do that for a year, you're ahead of everyone that started at the same time as you. I don't think that we were like our concept is niche. First and foremost is blackness, which is like 3.5 million people, or maybe 4.5 million people in the UK. Yeah. Then of that, it's focused on men.
Yeah.
So that's half.
Yeah.
But then there have to be adult men that have children. That's 20% of that. I'm probably trying to speak to 400,000 people in the UK.
Yeah,
max.
Yeah.
We get probably 10% of that right now. So for me, that's fantastic. But I'm never going to have a podcast that's going to do 1 million downloads or five. It's not designed for that.
Yeah.
But for me, it's like I go out and I ask people intentionally, even if they got children or not, can you come and have a conversation with us? Because that information is going to help our community. Just ask.
Yeah.
It's not about size. It's not about, it's just about you and the kind of way, the energy you bring to people. It's like, the real question is, do I want to sit down with you two for an hour?
Yeah.
Because that's really what it comes down to, or two. That's what it really comes down to, because I'm busy and I don't want to travel to where I'm traveling to. So you just got to really put yourself out there and have the conversation. I hope more people will be down for it than you think.
Yeah, I agree.
With what you were saying, what has fatherhood taught you about yourself?
Well, most of it is the emotional stuff. It taught me that I wasn't the man that I thought I was. There's no theory of man. Man is like, is in action. Who you are in action is who you are. The theory of what you can say out of your mouth, the kind of nice, curtailed, perfectly curated language that you create about your existence means nothing. What happens when it's happening? Who are you when it's bad? Who are you when people need you? And so I think one of the core values of being a man is how many people you take care of and how well you take care of them. The more, the greater. So I had to learn that after the fact. And that's one of the worst things to do, which is like build a family and learn about how family works after the fact. So I don't know what your relationship is with your dads. I don't know what role they played in your family. But their role was not the same as the role that we've been given now. So they might even be able to give you some code, but the code doesn't translate fully into today's mission. So you need people that are peers and contemporaries to give you that information. I never had it. So I just had to figure it out. So I became a man in fatherhood. And it's by far the greatest gift that I've ever been given. My understanding of my presence, my impact, my responsibility is significantly greater than it was 5 years ago. And then it makes me like indefatigable. Like I'm a different human being now. And I'm so glad that I had to go through it. It was painful as fuck though.
Yeah.
Like honestly, the most painful experience I've ever gone through is that time. But on the other side, I'm kind of like, I really appreciate it.
Mm-hmm.
Like I needed it because I was really running on like ego. Like I can do this. Like mm-hmm. I'll be fine. It'll be fine.
Yeah.
Ain't gonna be fine.
That's kind of how I move now, you know. Yeah, so maybe I need to.
You tell me more. What do you mean?
Just like the ego thing. Like not everything is good. Like nothing could happen, and I'm like stressed out or like worried or nothing really phases me.
Mm.
I'm like everything's fine. It'll be fine. Like we're good. I'll pattern it.
Mm.
That's so it's the ego thing. Like I'll fix everything.
Mm.
That's kind of where I am now. Mm. But I know that's not right. I need to change.
Mm.
Yeah. So what you said kind of made me think.
Look, have a conversation with your partner because that's the only barometer for how well you're truly doing.
Mm.
And you have to really pay attention to what it is that they're asking of you. Like, you know your partners. You have to know to yourself, are they good people, clean-hearted people that want the best for me and my family? If you do, you can just listen to them. Mm. You don't have to sit there and scrutinize them, go back and forth with them. So it's like, if I just ask you for something, I just do it. Mm. I can tell you what, like, no, but basically, I think what you should be doing and why that's not right. And actually, if you do it this way, it's like, no, you need this, like, here you go. And it should be frictionless. And I feel like really understanding what a man is like, it's really an act of service. Mm. But you can only do it for a group of people that you're committed to at all costs. You cannot just do it outside. That doesn't work. So deprioritize a lot of those external things that are taking up time and energy and effort. If I'm saying even your career, I feel is secondary.
Yeah,
no, my career is secondary to my children.
Yeah.
If they call me right now, I go wherever they need.
Yeah.
And if there's something that they need, if their mother needs something, I go wherever it's needed. There is never a question. And it's like, we think that because we're thinking in this sort of Liam Neeson type mentality of like, if my children need anything, I'm going to kill for them. And it's just like, for what? Why would you want to do that? That means you failed. Why are you killing for your children?
Yeah.
So I think it's more about they need your presence and your calm. So they really need to be anchored by your presence. That means that if they are uncomfortable, so you talked about your child crying, it's difficult because your 10-month-old is different. You get to like 2, they cry for very specific reasons or they are uncomfortable for very specific reasons and they need safety and they need clarity. So I talk to my children and I take them through the paces of what they need to do, what's going to happen today. So if they're crying, I know it's because they don't understand, they feel unsafe, they're hungry or they're tired. These are simple things they need to change. So you're able to just like fix those things. So that's when the fixing mentality does come into use. But also if you don't get into their mind, you don't actually make the problem go away. Soothing them with stuff is like a 1.0, but you've got to make them genuinely okay. Like, are you okay? Do you understand that your mother's left to go to work? Mm-hmm. She's not going to be back for 6 hours. We can do a countdown. It's 5 hours. Yeah. It's 4 hours. Yeah.
So
3 hours.
That kind of makes sense for you as well. It's true still.
Yeah.
It's true. How do you, with obviously Dope Black Dads, how do you find it, you know, talking to younger black men or even younger men in general and teaching the next generation?
So I'm going to be honest, I don't have the capacity to do it. Like my mission takes all my energy away and I serve large companies, loads of different individuals, loads of leaders personally and professionally.
Mm-hmm.
Then obviously, I told you my children are... So when it comes to like catching other people, it's rare. But if I see it, I engage. Mm. So my way of doing it is if I see someone doing something dope, I will reach out and tell them. Mm. I'll send them a couple of voice notes of just like, look, this is what I'm seeing. This is what I want for you. And I do people of all ages, mm-hmm. everyone from anywhere. I would just do that naturally. And that's kind of always been my way. Above and beyond that, like for you two, I just saw something in you that reminded me of me. So I wanted to be here just to share space like, and whatever it is.
What did you see? What did you see, man?
Tell us more, man.
It's a really, so, so I talk about male intuition more and more now. So I'm going to get you guys to come to the men's circle.
Cool, okay. Nice.
I talk about male intuition. Men don't use it enough. We can't observe the patterns and energetically what people are presenting. So I already know that you're well-meaning, good black men by the way that you communicate to each other, the things you talk about, the fact that your wife is referenced in the title of your podcast.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
There are certain indicators that I look for quality of man. Now, that doesn't mean that you're going to be perfect, but it's the intent. Now, if you have the information, the question is, are you going to walk through the door? I don't know that right now, but for me, I think I can take a risk and say, I'll sit with you for 2 hours and share that space and have that conversation because I think more than likely than not, you will be. you need to become aware of what that gift is.
Yeah.
Because you're not doing a pod to become pod famous.
Mm.
You're creating your own movement for everyone your age to go through this journey better than my generation.
Yeah, yeah, 100.
So if you think about how many men are you collecting on the journey, if you're not collecting men, you're missing a moment. Mm. So for even for me, we've had to change what we do because I never had the capacity to do it in that way. I honestly, I came to say I'm unhappy, found out there was like 100 people that were unhappy. Then I was like, all right, I'm taking what you just all just said and I'm going to tell 100,000 people.
Yeah.
We told hundreds of thousands and millions of people around the world, but I never actually fixed my own problem.
Mm.
So I had to go, and then my problem arrived at my door. It was like, excuse me, you didn't acknowledge me. So then I had to deal with that over a 3-4 year period. I'm only now just getting back fully on track in terms of like what the mission is. But we've just evolved into a platform. I just make sure we're in enough places speaking about the values and the actual behaviors of really what I've learned and what I've understood. And I gift that to anyone all the time. That's my particular way.
Yeah.
But I also think for someone like you two and the age that you at, I'll guarantee you there's like 50 to 100 versions of you desperately just looking for someone to say, look, come.
Yeah.
And like, we'll figure it out together. Because the main thing for men is lonely.
Yeah, that's definitely... Because you know what? I think that's kind of why we even really started it. Because
yeah.
I think we've both... Obviously, we've been friends for since college. So what, maybe like 10, almost 2012, isn't it?
10
like
12 years.
Yeah. So... It was interesting us getting married and having children at a similar time because it's like once that happens, it's like everyone just forgets. They're just like, oh, you're with your family now, so we don't check up on you as much. Mm. The only person that I feel like has like really really stuck around to check on me like constantly is obviously Ken and Akin because it's good to have those friends that even though sometimes they can be a bit overbearing. They're always there because they want you to be okay. And that's acting to a T.
A lot of people never, and I noticed it, and I used to joke about with it, but a lot of people never ask, how are you?
Yeah.
Like, how's the dad doing?
Yeah.
A lot of it's, how's the baby? How's the missus? Yeah. But no one's like, how is Ken doing?
Yeah.
And I found that period lonely.
Yeah,
so it was good to have you.
Yeah.
Because it was like, if I'm complaining about something, you're like, oh my God, I'm complaining about the same thing.
Same thing.
So we were like, why can't we have that conversation and talk to other dads that are going through the same thing and to reach out. So,
but how are you though?
I'm all right, man.
You know those answers.
I'm good. I think I'm good. I'm good.
Yeah.
We had this conversation a couple of weeks ago. So
yeah.
Like the first year was like very tough in terms of being a dad and being a husband because it all kind of came around a similar time. And I was kind of like thrown into this. But now things are making sense. Like now I feel like I'm getting the hang of being a husband, being a dad. So I think I'm good now.
Yeah.
I think I'm okay. Good.
Let's do this together, Ken.
Mm-hmm.
How are you?
Damn, man. I'm okay. Genuinely, like, I'm okay. Like, I could be better, but I'm not, like, upset, terrible, anxious, anything. I feel like I'm okay.
Mm-hmm. How are you?
Good.
How are you?
Okay. You got baby breakdown this year. No, I'm joking. No, I'm actually okay. Mm-hmm. Genuinely. I'm not just saying it for the sake of the cameras and the mics. Yeah. I'm actually okay.
Yeah. How are you?
I'm okay.
How are you?
I'm okay. Like, I'm good.
How are you?
I'm good, bro. How are you?
I'm fantastic. How are you?
I'm good.
What's happening for you right now?
Damn, man, this is coming out of therapy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
What's happening for me right now? Started a new job, which is good. My son turned 2 like last month, which is good. Me and my wife are doing okay, doing well. That's it. I'm starting to find my relationship with Christ. I'm trying to improve on that. What else is going on for me?
Yeah. Since your relationship with your partner is doing okay,
mm-hmm.
What's one thing that would make it significant?
One thing that will make it significantly better, I think it's the time that we share together. I think a lot of our life is centered around like work and the kid. So I think what we're lacking right now is that time and like just to reconnect and like the romance and like that quality time. Because when a kid comes, it takes a lot of that away. So I think that's what we speak about like every day. Like even tomorrow, we planned a whole day together, which is nice. I think that's what's missing, like that. Me and her time.
Mm. How much time would you need with her? And how often?
I think maybe just once a week, you know? Mm. Once a week where it's like dedicated, this is me and you are going to spend today together.
Cause how much time would you need?
I don't know, maybe like the afternoon, evening.
Mm. Yeah. Who could you like enroll in that to help you?
No, usually it's our mums. Mm. But I saw a TikTok the other day that said our mums are not like the grandmas of the previous generation. No, like our mums are busy now. So if I call my mum, mum can look after, oh, I'm going out, I've got this. If I call her mum, oh, I'm going out, I've got this. So in Zeph's first year, they were very hands-on, but recently they've been like a bit, you know, which has probably been why we haven't spent as much time together, because the people in our life, our support system, like they're not always there. But you know, they try though.
Who else could you enroll?
That's it, man. That's it. Mm. I don't think we would give our son to people. Mm. I think we only kind of trust our mums and our dads.
What about this guy?
I don't think he's ready yet. I don't think he's ready yet. Yeah.
Can I invite you into something? Mm-hmm. Two things. Mm-hmm. One, sit down with both of the mothers, mm-hmm. preferably together. Mm-hmm. Tell them what your vision is, because they probably don't understand the vision. Because what it can feel like is that you're offloading your children. Mm. What you're actually trying to do is reconnect with your wife, which is powerful. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And the one thing you can do, especially with your mother, is enroll her in something that's powerful that helps you. So have that conversation first and foremost. Second of all, he is ready.
Are you, Nick?
He's ready. I'm learning. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So one of the things that men don't do, first and foremost, is take primary care of children. Second thing we don't do, we don't lead in terms of organizing our children's day. Mm-hmm. So as men, interconnectedly, we have to have a conversation of like preparing ourselves, getting ready. So that means you have to go to his house and sit with his child for 2 hours just to get that time, like being around and amongst it. Mm-hmm. And you two do it together. You take your child, you take your child. We're going to be in the house together. Women, you have to get out of here because we're going to do some time. Then you build the relationship. So when he is with you, you actually understand what it is to look after a 2-year-old.
Yeah.
And now you're an additional resource because he trusts you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. So when I mean be really intentional about the thing that you want, there is absolutely no reason to delay. Mm. So the other thing that I always talk about with men is like, where is your like undeclared commitments? Remove them. So if you look at your week, anything that's in your diary, that's in your head, that isn't formally put there, like, oh, on Wednesday, I have to do this, but nobody actually asked you, stop doing it.
Yeah.
Don't commit to those things. Only commit to the conversations that you've signed up for, that have been said, that have been written down, and put it in the diary intentionally. Once you've done that, you can actually make enough space to be like, I'm going to spend more time with my partner today.
Yeah. No, that makes a lot of sense. To be honest, and thinking about it, I've always said that, you know, it's going to be very interesting when we're both having to look after each other's kids. If they want a date night, if we want a date night, we're 20 minutes away from each other. It's just to drop them off. Mm. So it's actually just to actually take that first step of actually doing it and trialing it and seeing. So what you said doesn't make a lot of sense.
Yeah, take some time. Like, you think to yourself, by the summer, I want to be able to do this and have this patterned. Mm. First step is you're going to take time with your children by yourself. The second step is you're going to leave him for an hour. And you're going to come back with your child. So that next step is going to be 4 hours. Mm. And then you're able just to actually hold it down for a period of time. So just keep testing that for a little bit. And then also, then you do it vice versa, because actually your son obviously is 10 months and needs to. And then you keep playing with that. To get to a point, what you will realize is you're able to do frontline parenting pretty much on your own. Mm. And not only can you do it, you're going to want to do it. You're going to be like, we were doing, let's take the kids, let's go. And then like, your missus is going to look at you and be like, can I come? Like, no,
it's
not time. It's a really powerful thing. I think a lot of mothers get depleted. It doesn't allow them to be their best self. Mm. It doesn't allow them to recharge. It doesn't allow them to genuinely like honor who they really are, the other side of them. Mm. And many of us, we vacate that space because it's really difficult. It's very new. And the cost of it will be your relationship.
Yeah.
Like fundamentally. Don't listen to anyone externally that's either like taking you away from tuning into your family and serving your family as a priority. It's great to hear that you're tuning into Christ. Like, I think having a really strong value system will keep you guided and grounded. Mm. But you have to then turn that into practical action inside your family.
100. Yeah. So just before we go, because of time, what are some quick tips for young dads or dads in general?
For me, I always start with going to therapy. I think the second thing is like really develop a strong sense of purpose. and a value system and connect it to either something that's a higher frequency or something that's in externally or something that's internally to yourself.
Mm-hmm.
I think having a marriage plan is also one of the most valuable things that you could probably do. If you don't have a plan, you just will exist and try and operate off vibes and feelings and you will lose. That plan should be regularly modified and updated and communicated to the people around you about what it is that you're trying to create. You have to enroll your immediate family of people, but also your wider networks. You need support people. You need people that know nothing about your life in an intricate detail. You know, people that really know you from when you were five and be able to connect to them and reach out to them and get grounding. Community is going to be the number one thing that's going to help you navigate fatherhood. It's not going to be your own like power and intuition. That's like absolute nonsense because the universe will find you and break those things apart.
Yeah.
No, yeah, community is really important.
Very, but I think that's really that's actually the biggest thing.
Yeah,
community, it definitely is, and I feel like that's the thing is it's a very good thing that what we're doing and what you've been doing, the work you've been putting in as well, because it's even seeing your pages stuff that's even inspired us as well. So honestly, you really do deserve your flowers.
And give you one more quick gift. Yeah. So when I'm asking you how are you, if you don't pause and reflect and go inward, I'm gonna ask you again. That's basically what that was.
Yeah.
So because we do the automation, so it's like, how are you? It's like, no, I'm good, man. I'm good.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But you know, really, it's like, hold on, wait, how am I?
Yeah.
No, I'm okay. I'm actually good.
Yeah.
If you can't do that, then you're not giving me an authentic answer and I'm going to keep going. Mm. And so the same thing of how am I and who am I, those are two questions that people really struggle to answer.
Yeah.
And both of them, I'll just keep resurfacing until you talk your way into an understanding of what the thing is that you're protecting. What you were protecting was that you wanted more time with your wife, which is an incredible thing.
Mm.
And that's something that's on your mind. So that's the gift of like, really, when you're asking each other, how are you? Pause and reflect and genuinely answer. Otherwise, just don't ask.
Yeah.
If you don't want to hear it. Yeah.
Yeah.
I heard that. And I think one big thing I've learned actually is maybe I'm actually going to try therapy again still.
Mm.
I'll try. I'll do the six sessions and I'll come back to you.
Google Black and Asian Therapy Network.
Mm-hmm.
You'll find a black therapist. Make a really conscious decision if you want them to be black or not black.
Yeah.
Make a conscious decision if you want them to be man or woman and the rough age of what they are.
Okay.
Normally, whenever you pick that, you pick it from a place of meaning. So there's a reason why you want to speak to that particular person because you find safety in that identity. When you have that conversation, go in with the ugliest thing that you're thinking first. Don't waste time with like, yeah, I'm cool, man. And, you know, just some stuff and work is this and don't do that. Go in with the thing that you recycles and it's in your head that you're not good enough, that you fear, that makes you feel really uncomfortable. Just say it and just say nothing.
Yeah.
And then they'll coach you through what it is that you need to get an understanding of. The reason why you maybe not got anything out of it because you didn't go straight to the thing.
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah, I agree.
Cool, man.
No, that's cool. No, thank you ever so much, Marvin.
Thank you for having me, man.
Honestly,
I wish we had longer.
Yeah, no.
I'm here for you. If you need anything, just hit me anyway, offline or online.
I appreciate it. Obviously, you know that one's understanding about having people in your community. Thank you for being part of our community now.
You're in it now,
it's
man.
It's by force.
don't get annoyed when I message you every day. Like, Marvin, what happens when I do this?
No, thank you. But yeah, if you want to plug your socials quickly before we...
Follow us on Dog Black Dads. Also follow me, my agency, on Beloved Agency. If you want business advice, I'm on LinkedIn. I'm really heavy on there. But also Discover with MH is my Instagram.
Mm-hmm.
Is there anything else? Dog Black Dad Podcast, we're on YouTube now. That's a new thing. And I'm also on YouTube as Marvin Harrison. So just search me and Dog Black Dads, you'll find all the things.
Thank you. Now, big shout out to Marvin. Obviously, like, share, comment, subscribe.
Love that.
Don't Tell My Wife Podcast. Tell a friend to tell a friend. And yeah, man, we'll see you guys next week.
Appreciate it.
Appreciate it. Peace.